Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for the warm welcome here. And just a little bit more about myself. I've been with the assessor's office for over 31 years now. I started as an appraiser trainee, and I've just been very blessed to be able to be there for over 31 years and to have the opportunity to come out and share information to you property owners. And that's actually what I do most of the time, is I do go out and give presentations. I talk at realtor offices, various associations, chambers of commerce. If you belong to any other organization and you would like to have a speaker come out and talk about property assessments, in the blue folder is my business card. Please feel free to give me a call or send me an email, and I will arrange to either come out myself or have one of my colleagues come out to share more information about property assessments with your group. So in starting with the assessor's office, you know, our main job is really to value property, to find out who the owners are so that the property taxes will go to the correct parties. And we have so much information right now that's available on our website, and we're constantly, actually, we're really working to revamp it and to make it even more user-friendly. When Assessor Jeffrey Prang came into office in 2014, he gave our IT people about 3 months, 90 days, to revamp our website. And we had a different feature. Some of you may remember what it looked like, but we decided it just wasn't maneuverable. It was not as user-friendly, and so we wanted to make it more user-friendly and being able to easily find content quicker. And so regarding changes of ownership, under Proposition 13, a law that was passed back in 1978, whenever property changes ownership, it is subject to reassessment, or when there's new construction, it is subject to reassessment for the addition. If there's been a decline in value, we can do a review for a temporary decline in value. And if new construction has been partially completed as of the January 1 lien date. So all those activities can trigger a reassessment. Now, when the law passed back in 1978, for all those property owners, we established a 1975 base value for those properties. So if you owned property after the law passed, let's say you had bought it back in 70, law passed in 78. We went back and determined what the 75 value would have been, and we enrolled that. That's why a lot of property owners, how many of you guys had property when the law passed? I want to see a show of hands here. Okay, so if you have property, if you look, you'll see that your property has a 75 base year on there. And so from that point on, the assessed value would increase no more than 2% a year. Even though the market was going up 5, 10, 20, 30%, your assessed value on which property taxes are based were only going up no more than 2% a year. And that's the law under Proposition 13. It also sets the general levy at 1%. And then there's voted indebtedness that is added on top of that. I'll let the helicopter fly by. So for Los Angeles County, the average tax rate for LA County is about 1.25%. Now, when property changes ownership, when you record a deed, we always get people who say, well, I'm just recording a deed. There's no cash involved. It's a straight gift. I'm just gifting it to someone. Even though there's no cash involved, because there's now a change in title, you've recorded a deed, you've transferred title to another person, that is a change in ownership, that is subject to reassessment. And when we reassess property, whenever there's a change in ownership, we establish a new base value based on the fair market. And so that's why we're seeing now with a lot of property owners, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on, but we've got owners who've lived in their homes since the law passed. Now they're passing on, leaving property to their kids. or the kids are selling their properties, and the new owner ends up with this gigantic supplemental property tax bill, which I'll talk about a little bit more later on as well. And so, you know, for all those folks who've had Prop 13 and lived in their home for a very long time, you know, you've really benefited from that change in the law. So, our website, we're very proud of it. We have a section. This is the assessor, Assessor Jeffrey Pang. We have a section for homeowners, business owners, real estate professionals. We also deal with other properties like boats, aircraft, possessory interest, institutional properties. And then if you want to stay informed, I believe you can, go to that next page, you can sign up to receive emails or newsletters from our office. So where it says stay informed, if you provide an email address, we'd be sure to send you information. So for a new property owner, we automatically, when you're buying residential property, we will send a letter to you, the message to homeowners. It'll talk about annual property tax bills, supplemental property taxes, and filing for the homeowner's exemption. As a homeowner, you are eligible for the homeowner's exemption. As long as you own and occupy that property, you are eligible for the homeowner's exemption. The homeowner's exemption reduces your taxable assessment by $7,000, so you save $70 a year off your annual property tax bill. The homeowner's exemption is not automatic. You must apply for it. And when you do apply for the homeowner's exemption, we do require a Social Security number or a tax ID number, a TIN. So we do need those numbers because it is reported to the Board of Equalization. It is tracked. Also for homeowners, and I'm sure that this is probably what a lot of you came to hear about, is what is known as the parent-child exclusion. So remember what I said, that anytime property changes ownership, it's subject to reassessment. But if it's a transfer between parent and child, and under homeowners, we'll go to exclusions and tax relief. I wish I could blow it up here. There. There you see it? I'm just having trouble going there. Parent-child transfers. So if it's a transfer between parent and child, and a transfer could be the child buying out the parent, just paying cash. It could be a parent gifting the property to the child, or the parent dies and leaves the property to the child. So all those transactions are eligible for the parent-child exclusion. And this is for parent-child as individuals. Entities that own property do not qualify for any of these exclusions. So if the property is held like in an LLC, that will not qualify for the parent-child exclusion. But if it is the parent's living trust, and the parents die and leave the property to their children by the vehicle of their living trust, that is eligible for the parent-child exclusion. And this is known as Proposition 58. Proposition 58 is for transfers between parent and child. There's another provision known as Proposition 193, and that is for transfers between grandparent to grandchild. So 58, it can go either way, parent-child, child-to-parent. 193 can only go from the grandparent to the grandchild, and only if the parent, who is the child of the grandparent, is deceased. So with the grandparent to grandchild, grandma can pass property to the granddaughter. Granddaughter is eligible to file for the grandparent-grandchild exclusion. However, the parent of the grandchild or the children of the grandparents must be deceased. So mom and dad must be deceased in order for the grandchild to qualify for the grandparent-grandchild exclusion.
Mom,
yes?
And dad, or mom,
mom and dad. Both parents must be deceased. Yes, Stephanie? Did you have a question? Yeah, that was okay. So who is a child for this provision? A child is the son, the daughter, a son-in-law, daughter-in-law, a stepchild, while the step-parent-stepchild relationship exists, and a child adopted before the age of 18. And so that's why mother and father both must be deceased, because the in-laws, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, are considered the child. And we've been seeing quite a bit of this these days where the parents have left or have placed property in their living trust. They've named their children as the beneficiaries. And the children think, you know, now that mom and dad are, have passed on, their property's in a trust, I don't have to go through probate, all is good. What they don't realize is that death is a change in ownership. And when a property owner dies, there's information that they must file with the assessor's office. So when a property owner dies and their property is in a trust, now in your blue folder, and also on the, available on the website, there is a beige colored brochure in your blue folder, and it's called Transfer Decedent's Real Property. So I'm going to be talking about Transfer Decedent's Real Property and parent-child, just mixing it all in there because it all flows together. And so when a property owner dies, the assessor's office is supposed to be notified within 150 days of the passing of the decedent. How is the assessor's office notified? Well, you need, so here's the death of real property owner. We are notified by the filing of a change of ownership statement, death of real property owner. So all this information is available on our website. We also have frequently asked questions, and I'm trying to get to the, there it is, change in ownership statement, and also a hard copy is in your blue folder.
What is the point of having the parent, it be necessary for the parent to be deceased, parents to be deceased, in order for them to give it to the grandchild?
Okay, so your question is, why does the parent need to be deceased in order for the grandparent to give it to the grandchild? Because, well, can't understand, you know, the intent of the legislature, but the initial was parent-child. That was the first one. So mom and dad can leave property to their children. Child can file for an exclusion. But what happens if mom and dad are deceased? Then can grandparent leave property to the children? So that's how it works, and that's why the parents must be deceased in order for the grandchild to be eligible to take advantage of that grandparent-grandchild exclusion. Yeah.
This was done by initiative, so it is the text of the initiative which is controlling. You know, proposition, whichever one
proposition
she's been quoting.
Proposition 58, Prop 193, and those were all passed in law around 86. Yeah. Proposition 58 was passed back in 1986.
The Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association sponsored numerous changes in the law, and this is among them. And it may be partly because parents didn't want, they probably did surveys and said that people didn't want things going directly to the grandchildren just because you were skipping the parents unless the parents were not there. So that just may have been their estimate of what who would vote for their proposition.
Okay, the parents die. The house that the parents have goes to the children. They benefit from Proposition 58, correct. Now, the grandparents are still alive, and they have a house. Can they donate a house to the grandchildren, and still the grandchildren would have the benefit of the other proposition or not? Or it's only one way, only one time?
Okay, so it's
situation
two different
properties. This is a situation where there would be two transferred to the same individual, one from the parents and then from the grandparents.
So when the parents pass property to their children, that's fine.
Okay.
Then when the parents, let's say the parents are killed in a car crash or something, it's kind of morbid. Now grandparents can pass property to their grandchild, and grandchild's eligible to take advantage of the grandparent-grandchild exclusion. And there are limitations, though, but I'll go into that soon, too. But let me just go backwards a little with notifying the assessor's office. So when someone dies, their property's in the living trust, we need to be notified by the filing of a change of ownership statement, death of real property owner. And under, there's very small print here, but in the law, Section 480B of the Revenue Taxation Code requires that The personal representative filed a statement with the assessor in each county where the decedent owned property at the time of death. You would file a separate statement for each parcel of real property owned by the decedent. And from husband to wife, it would be eligible for the interspousal exclusion, and we still would want to be notified. So yes, they would still file this with the office, but there's nothing for them to file for interspousal. We know that they are husband and wife, then that would make it eligible for the interspousal exclusion. But if it is not clear that they are husband and wife, then we will ask for the marriage certificate to show that they were indeed husband and wife and eligible for the interspousal exclusion. Okay, so that's the change of ownership statement. So, yes.
Do you suppose that these changes of transferring down from grandchildren to children to parents and whatnot, do you suppose this might encourage loving children and grandchildren with dollar signs in their eyes to speed things along?
No opinion on that. So when a parent passes away in the property and the trust, we would need to be notified by the filing of a change of ownership statement. And at the same time, if the beneficiary who is a child is eligible for the parent-child exclusion, they could also submit that Prop 58 claim form and a copy of the death certificate, as well as a copy of the entire trust, including amendments. So all those documents are sent to the assessor's office. Now, I've seen so many cases where parents have died, the property's in the trust, and we are never notified. Years go by. I had a case. Parents died, the property was in South Pasadena. 10 years go by. The kids decide to refinance on the home. To make some improvements. And that's when we find out that, 11 years or 10 years earlier, the last parent died. There's no Prop 58 claim form on file. We were never notified. So when we discover that there is a death, we will go all the way back to the date of death and reassess the property at the fair market value, which is what we did in this case. And after we did that, the children received 4 set of bills totaling over $27,000. Because the parents had lived in that home in South Pasadena for a very long time, and values there had appreciated greatly. And then about a month or so later, they received another set of 4 bills for about another $27,000. And with the law with Proposition 58, you have 3 years from the date of change to apply, or before you sell it to a third party. And if you miss that, you still have 6 months from the mailing date of the notice of assessed value change to file. So in my South Pasadena case, the children received 8 years worth of back taxes because they never notified us timely. So we can go back 8 years and capture what we call those escape assessments. But when they contacted us because they received a notice of assessed value change along with those 8 bills. And so we explained to them what happened, why the property was reassessed, because their parents are now deceased. They said, well, it was in a trust. He goes, yes, but the trust became irrevocable, is now subject to reassessment. And so we told them about Proposition 58. They were still within the 6-month window to apply, and they applied very quickly and gave us all the documentation. The paperwork must be in-house within the 6 months. It can't be in transit on the last day of the 6 months. It must be in-house. So the paperwork got in. Everything was in order. We were able to reverse that date of death reassessment, issue refunds on the taxes they had already paid, and cancel the other bills because they weren't due yet. And so they were very fortunate that they were proactive. Enacting. Now, if they had waited, and they hadn't sold the property yet, but let's say they waited until month 8 to give us the paperwork, they could still receive the benefit of Prop 58, but it would not be retroactive. It would only be valid from that year they filed going forward. So what does that mean? That means that we would not have been able to go all the way back and make it a retroactive correction. They would have had to pay 56,000 dollars, $54,000 of back taxes because it did not file in time. And that's why it's so important to understand. So if you have living trusts, it wouldn't hurt to keep the blue brochure that's in your blue folder called Parent-Child Exclusion and the beige brochure, Transfer of Decedent's Real Property, with your trust documents along with the forms. And just let your kids know, look, if you want to keep my Prop 13 assessment, when I die, this is what you're going to have to do if you want to take advantage of it. Otherwise, the assessor will be more than happy to establish a new fair market base value on that property. And because this benefit is not automatic, you must apply for it. So again, the deadline is 3 years from the date of change or before sale to a third party, or 6 months from the mailing date of the notice of assessed value change. And if you still own the property and you file beyond and you missed all the deadlines, you're still eligible, but it will not be retroactive. It's only valid from the year you file going forward. Question?
These are state propositions, I'm assuming.
Yes,
so
it's
applicable
state of California.
Throughout the state.
Yes.
Thank you.
So Prop 58 is throughout the state of California.
If the children decide to not to live there and rent their houses, does the maintaining of the Proposition 13 taxes stay?
So his question is, does the child have to live on the property to qualify? And no, they do not have to occupy the property as their primary residence. Excuse me. So there are limitations, though. If it is the parent's primary residence, there's no limit on the amount that can be excluded. If it is other than primary residence, let's say they have a little mini mall, an apartment building, other rental or income properties, those are only, they're subject to $1 million that are eligible for exclusion. And it's $1 million based on the assessed value. So the parent has a house, and let's say they have an apartment building. So the house they would file, there's no limit. The apartment, if the assessed value, and that's the assessor's assessed value, is at $400,000, and they file for it, then it would be eligible for the exclusion. It falls below the $1 million limit. But they have to apply for it. Again, these are not automatic benefits. You must apply for it. So that's Prop 58, Prop 193, and those are the forms that need to be filed. And it's just so important. When someone dies, the assessor's office needs to be notified, because when we discover it, we will go back and reassess. Yes.
Okay. So if the parent dies and wants to skip the child and go give the house directly to the grandchild still has to file that it changed ownership but doesn't get any of the benefits. Correct?
So you're saying that in the trust, the grandparents leave the property to their grandchild, even
yeah.
though they know their children are still alive.
Yes.
The grandparents have a right to do that, but the grandchild will not be eligible for the grandparent-grandchild exclusion. I mean, even if they applied, we're going to ask for a copy of the death certificate of their parents. And if they cannot provide us a copy of the death certificate, we will not approve that claim. Because
yeah.
we need to know that the parents are deceased.
Oh, the own parents, yeah, right.
Yes, the grandchildren's parents must be
yeah.
deceased.
So the grandchildren don't even have to fill it out because it doesn't work anyway. Got it. Thank you.
So, yeah. So the grandparent can't leave it to the grandchild, but it's going to get reassessed to the fair market value. Yes. And then regarding changes in ownership, let's say you've got three siblings and the property was left to the three siblings. So as of the date of death, they file for the parent-child exclusion, and they're granted the exclusion as of the date of death. Now, let's say one sibling now wants to buy out the other two. It's going to get reassessed two-thirds because there's no exclusion right now for transfers among siblings. So, yes, the one child can buy out the other two siblings, but the portion that they buy out will be reassessed. The one sibling who now owns it, they will keep their one-third at their parents' old Prop 13 base, but the other two-thirds will be reassessed as the fair market value and added to that. So it will have what we call a blended base value.
If the children divide up the assets and one wants the house and one doesn't, so that's at the point that the child that wants the house takes the house, that would work.
Well, you know, our office does recognize what we call non-prorata distribution, but let's, the assets, if it's not the house, and one, let's say mom has the house and cash assets. If the values are equal, then the one child would be eligible to get the house and file for the full exclusion, and the other child gets all the cash. But then we will have to see, is the value equal? Because if the house is worth more and the cash is, the house value is up here, but the cash value is down here, then there's really a change in ownership because the child with the house got more value. Even so it would be reassessed.
So if the parents leave the house to the child and leave some amount of cash to the other child, but it's not equal, that wouldn't work, or would that
Okay,
work?
It would have to be very clearly stated in the trust document, which is why we will ask for a copy of the trust. We're going to read through that trust as well. So if that's the case, then it'll have to be very clearly spelled out. Okay, so that's parent-child exclusion and notifying the assessor's office upon the death of a property owner. The senior replacement dwelling benefit, known as Prop 1690, and that's the green brochure that's in your blue folder. And again, this would be found under homeowners, exclusions and tax relief, and seniors. So under this provision, a senior, someone who's 55 years or older, you sell the original property, which you occupied as your primary residence, which means that it is eligible for the homeowners or disabled veterans exemption. So you must be 55 years of age when you sell the original. Then you can acquire a replacement of equal or lesser value within 2 years of selling the original. File for a base value transfer. If you meet all of the requirements, if you meet the age requirement, the time requirement, and the value requirement, we will be able to transfer your adjusted Prop 13 value from your original property to your replacement property. And your taxes are based on the assessed value. So it's really a huge savings, a huge benefit for seniors. It allows them to downsize without being penalized with higher property taxes. And a lot of seniors are doing it now, but I always encourage people, before you do this, you must do your homework. You need to make sure that you will be able to meet all of the requirements. Because if you sell the property and you're only 54, your claim is going to be denied. You did not meet the age requirement. Or let's say you sell your property, but you haven't found a replacement. Now you're going at the end of year two, and you're pushing right at that deadline. If you don't find that replacement within 2 years, the property you buy will not be eligible because you did not meet that time requirement. Or if you buy a replacement and you thought, oh wow, I got a really, really good deal on this property, but you bought a distressed sale. So let's say you sold your home for $500,000 and then you bought a replacement that was a distressed property at $500,000. Right? So you bought equal or lesser? You bought equal, you should be fine, right? Well, on paper, when you turn in that form to the office, our ownership staff will look at it and go, yeah, it meets all the requirements on paper. Then afterwards, it's sent to our appraisal staff. The appraisers are the ones who will prepare the documentation to do the value transfer. And then they're going to look at, well, what is the fair market value on the replacement? So if you bought that replacement home as a distressed property and you pay $500,000, but the fair market is really $600,000, guess what? The appraiser will deny the claim because you exceeded that equal or lesser requirement. And so that's why it's so important before you embark on this is that you do your homework. You do your homework. If you have questions, please feel free to call our office. I do need to give a disclaimer. I am not an attorney. I'm not a CPA. I'm not a financial planner, estate planner. I do not give legal or financial planning advice, and neither does anyone on our staff. This is strictly information for educational purposes only. Yes.
Let's say you sold your house, you look for another one, you found one. It's very close. Can you call the appraiser prior to buying the house to see if it will meet that guideline? Can it be appraised prior to buying it?
No, we can't. We won't be able to do that. We won't appraise prior to you buying it.
So then the buyer, the buyer's agent, or so forth, will have to come up with a reasonable ballpark figure?
Well, if the property is listed, it's going to have the listing price, and then once it sells, it's going to be reported on the preliminary change of ownership report, and it's also going to show up on documentary transfer tax, what you paid. And it's the appraiser's job to determine the value of this property. Is that really the fair market value? And most of the time it is. But every now and then, I'll get calls from property owners to say, your office denied my claim. And it's because the replacement property did not meet the value requirements. It exceeded it. So I should also add that if you buy the replacement within the first year of selling the original, you have a 5% inflationary factor. That means if I sold for $500,000, I have a cushion of $525,000. If I buy within the second year, I have a cushion of 10%, so that's $550,000. That's that little cushion there. Or I could buy my replacement first. But if I do that, there's no 5 or 10%. If I buy my replacement at $500,000, I better sell my original property for $500,000 or more. And so if this is taken advantage of, you know, it does allow seniors to move to be closer with loved ones or downsize to a smaller home because they don't need all that space, or they have a two-story home and they don't want to go up those stairs anymore. And so they're, you know, it makes sense for them, but I know if I'm used to paying taxes that are only $1,200 a year, and if I buy a $500,000 home, I'm looking at taxes at over $6,000 a year, I'm not going to move, right? But if done right, and you meet all the requirements, you'll be able to do this. Yes.
What if you sell a property in California and buy a replacement property that is not in California?
You won't benefit. This is only for property within California.
Within California.
Yes.
Okay.
And then with Proposition 60, it's within the county you reside in. If you want to buy a replacement property outside of the county you reside in, that county must have adopted the provisions of Proposition 90. That county board of supervisors must have adopted it, and there's only 11 counties that have a Prop 90 ordinance in place. There's 5 in Northern California, 6 in Southern California. So the 6 in Southern California are Ventura, Los Angeles, Orange, San Diego, Riverside, and San Bernardino. So those are the 6 counties in Southern California that have a Prop 90 ordinance in place. So you can sell in LA County and buy a replacement in Orange County, or sell in Orange County and buy in LA County. Sell LA County and go to Riverside or San Bernardino. But before you buy outside of the county you reside in, I always encourage my seniors to please pick up the phone, call that assessor's office to make sure that they still have a Prop 90 ordinance in place, because counties can opt in, they can opt out of the program. It's typically a 5-year program. So when that 5 years comes up, they can decide if they want to continue in the program. Yes.
Okay, if I understood your scenario correctly, a person has property they sold for $500,000, and then they bought another piece of property for $500,000. And so in their mind, they're thinking they're doing if it's right, but it wasn't how much they paid for it. It was much how it appraised for. So what could they have done to let them know that was going to happen?
What could we have let them know?
You said that.
Well, the law is pretty specific that the property when you acquire your, we're looking at the fair market value on the replacement. And then in the brochures and in the forms, it'll say the full cash value, the fair market value, that's what we're looking at. So it is spelled out, but you just have to read through everything. And so that's why I encourage people before you take advantage of any of these programs is to do your due diligence and to know what the requirements are.
Can you get a private appraiser?
If you want to hire an appraiser, I mean, that is up to you.
But would the county accept it is the question.
Will the county accept the private appraisal? We will look at it, but we do our own appraisal.
You do your own appraisal.
Yes. But, you know, this is just the extreme scenario. Most of the time, we do accept it. Let's say you sold your home. It was a single-family unit, and you bought a triplex. And you can do that. And so you can the unit that you occupy would be eligible for the base value transfer, but then the additional units, the other two units, would be subject to the fair market reassessment. And so you kind of, again, you must do your homework because if your assessed value on your home is, let's say, $500,000, that's your Prop 13 assessment, and then you buy a triplex for say, $1 million, well, you know, we're going to transfer that $500,000 to the unit that you occupy, but then the other two-thirds is going to be assessed at the $1 million. So you may not benefit from that. And that, again, is why it's so important to do your homework before you embark on this. Yes?
My impression is that private appraisers don't know all this stuff. So who do you go to for advice? Because I went to an estate lawyer and they gave me all kinds of screwed up advice.
We encourage people to do speak with legal professionals or people who are familiar with property tax law and property tax law in California. And because we can't give legal advice, we will try to give as much information as we can so that you will make an informed decision, but we can't say, yeah, you do it this way and you're good to go and all that. And you know, we can't do that. Yes?
Yeah, me? Okay. Another question. Two, actually. I'll make it short. If the grandparents leave the property, the house, to the grandchild, but it's a single mother, the father is unknown, and the mother died. Since the father is unknown, how do you know that the father is alive or died? So can the grandchild benefit then?
So the thing that what we will require is a copy of the death certificate.
But if the father is unknown?
If the father is
unknown. On the birth certificate says too. Unknown.
Single parent, then?
Yeah. So?
Then that's not an issue. If we don't know, then... We don't know, but then on the other hand, then if that paternal grandparent wants to leave something to the kids, there's no proof that they're really the paternal grandparents. So the maternal side is fine. Paternal side, you know. So okay. We do need the documentation otherwise. But so if it's just a single parent, then there's no other...
There's no other choice,
yeah.
Okay. And then if the grandparents leave the home to two grandchildren... One of the grandchildren, the parents died, the other grandchild still has the parents. Can the one grandchild that is orphaned, can it take advantage of the...
We can discuss on this later. I kind of have to think it through here. I'm going to have to think it through here. Sorry. Yes, sir.
This is just for one time.
So the Prop 6090 is a one-time-only benefit. And once you've taken advantage of it, that's it. Husband and wife are deemed to have used it together. So husband and wife are on title, and let's say the husband's 65, the wife is only 40, and then they take advantage of 6090. When the husband dies and the wife is now over 55 and she wants to take advantage of Prop 60, she won't be able to because she already took advantage of it with her husband.
Excellent. And the last question is, your illustration of selling a home for $500,000, if you were to buy a fourplex for $2 million, would you be eligible for the exemption so you're only in one quarter of the fourplex?
Well, we would have to determine what is the fair market value of the unit that you will be occupying as your primary residence in the fourplex. And so if the unit you occupy, if the value of that unit is $500,000 or less, then we'll carry over the $500,000, but then the remainder is going to be reassessed at the fair market value. Mm-hmm. So you're still going to be paying higher taxes, but maybe not as high as the full $2 million. So you'll get a what they call a blended base value. Now, with 69, again, it's a one-time only benefit, but let's say you or your spouse a few years later becomes severely and permanently disabled and your replacement home no longer works for you. The hallways are too narrow. You can't get a wheelchair in, or who knows, you bought a two-story townhome and you're in a wheelchair and you can't go up that second floor. There's a provision on this Proposition 110 which will allow you to take advantage of a value transfer one more time due to severe and permanent disability that occurs subsequent to you getting the 60-90 benefit. Prop 110, there's no age requirement. It's a disability requirement. So if you're the senior, you took advantage of 60-90, and then a few years later, someone becomes severely permanently disabled, they can sell that home, buy a replacement of equal or lesser value. It's pretty much the same requirements of 60-90, and file the paperwork, and then transfer the base value one more time based on disability. But let's say you're a 40-year-old, and you took advantage of 110. When you turn 55 later on, you will not be able to do 60-90. It doesn't work both ways. So you can do 60-90 first, and then become disabled later on, and do 110 later. But if you do 110 first, you cannot do 60-90 later. Okay, I really didn't get a chance to just showcase some of the great features of our website here. So we've got a ton of information. Find property assessment data maps. Here's the form for changing a mailing address, because if you're going to move, you better let us know what the new mailing address is, because if you don't, all notices and bills will go to the last known mailing address. So you must file a change of mailing address with the assessor's office. This is a supplemental tax estimator, and that's for property owners who are buying, let's say, their first home, and they want to figure out, well, what's my supplemental tax going to be? They can just go right in here. Can someone give me a residential address? Any address? Your neighbor's? 875. Let's say it sold April. Well, if you tell me it's an apartment, then I'm going to push up the value higher then. And let's say it sells for $1,000,005. Let's get an estimate. Oh, it's assessed higher than that right now. So, or maybe I put 150,000. I don't think I put enough zeros in there, right? 1, 2, 3. Did I put 1.5 million in there? I think I did. Well, in this case, 1.5 million is less than what it is currently assessed, because the buyer, instead of getting what we call supplemental bills, they're going to receive refunds for the difference in value. But they would still need to pay the annual property tax bill based on the higher assessment. So let me see if I put in, this is a huge refund. I'm going to put in, 9,000,005. That's more like it. Okay. So if I paid 9.5 million for this apartment building, I would receive two transfer bill, supplemental bills. The first one is for $1,240. These are just estimates, and it's for the remainder of the 2016 tax year, which is from May 1st through June 30th of 2017. And then a second for all of 2017, which would be $4,980. So in total, I'll receive three bills this year. The annual property tax bill, based on the assessed value as of January 1 of 2017, and two supplemental bills. And then in 2018, I'm just going to get the one annual property tax bill. So this is a great calculator. We try to encourage home buyers, especially first-time home buyers, to go in here and use it so that when they get the supplemental bills, they're anticipating it. They don't have sticker shock. Because can you imagine if you were the person who bought that home in South Pasadena, and let's say you paid $1 million for it, but it was only assessed at $200,000. You can imagine what that supplemental bill is going to look like, right? That's an $800,000 difference. So that would be a huge supplemental bill for that new home buyer. Did you have a question?
Yes. Under what circumstances might the assessor reassess a person's property? For example, you're not moving, you're still living in the house, you're not adding square footage or a new back room or something. You're doing something like putting on a new roof or repiping. Would that trigger a reassessment of the property?
If you're just doing simple like-for-like replacement, replacing a roof would not trigger reassessment. Replacing some windows would not trigger reassessment. Adding a pool will cause the assessment for the addition of the pool. Adding square footage will cause a reassessment, but just for the portion that was added. Adding a new bathroom will assess for the additional bathroom. So those will trigger reassessment, but simple remodeling or like-for-like replacement would not trigger a reassessment.
About the website, I went through all this earlier this year, and they finally quit sending me letters to correct the forms that I submitted. But they never actually sent me a letter saying you're okay, that you've been approved and that everything's okay. So I have no idea what the tax bill is going to be coming up. Is there a way on the website? I know you can go in and find out what your last tax bill was, but I don't know how to find out what the next tax bill is going to be.
Well, the 2017 bill goes out in October, so I think some of you might have seen this screen earlier. And let me put in that apartment address, 875 Victor. So we're really proud of our website because it's providing so much more information that's available to the public. The only thing you can't see in the what we call the assessor portal is the mailing address of the property owner and the property owner's name. That's not available on our public-facing website. Here's a picture of the property. Here's a map. And up here, this is the 2017 roll value. It's at $9,112,000. It has what we call it's got a 2015 base value. That means that was when it was acquired, and we enrolled $8.8 million. And we're anticipating, if it's based on the 2% increase, it'll be $9.2 million in 2018. And there's a description of the property here. There's land information, there's building information. The property was built in 1972. There's 50 units. Gives you the bedrooms and bath count, the square footage of the property. And you can see what kind of recording dates, the document numbers, whether or not these were what we call reappraisable events. So when you see a 7, that was a non-reappraisable event. But you see a 5, 3 and a 5, it means it was a reappraisable event. And the documentary transfer tax value was $8.8 million, and we enrolled that. And here you can look at the assessment history of this building.
That's where I would look?
This is where you would look to find out what is your assessed value. And so any changes that we make on our end will reflect here. If you're expecting a reduction in your assessed value, this is where you can check. Has the value correction posted? And you'll see that for this property, for 014, this is the original value, 1.8, and they paid $8.8 million for it. Or that's what was enrolled. And so the buyer got a huge supplemental bill. Okay, so you can either type portal.assessor.lacounty.gov, or when you're in the home page, just say, I want to find property data and maps. And so for property owners who've lived there forever and a day, we have information going all the way back to 1983. And another thing that you can look at are layers on this map. Let's see if we can get aerial layers. So you can look at this property from Google Earth up there. Yes.
Sorry, Okay, it was not related to the question that Jim just did, and I don't know if it was addressed earlier, but if a residence is being left to a boyfriend or a girlfriend, then property taxes are being reassessed, correct?
Yes, there's no exclusion for unmarried couples. There is a provision known as a co-tenant exclusion. I am kind of short on time now. For a co-tenant exclusion, it's only for two people, so it could be boyfriend, girlfriend, or on title. It must be a single family unit. They must both be on title. And if one party dies, as long as both parties occupied that property for a year before the person died, then the survivor is eligible for a co-tenant exclusion. So in that situation, the boyfriend or girlfriend would be eligible to keep, to not be reassessed. But again, it's very, very limited in scope. You both must be on title. You must have occupied that property for at least 1 year together.
Okay. And is there another solution? What if you get married? Is there a minimum time
if
that you will have to be married?
If you're married, if you're married and someone dies, you're eligible for the interspousal exclusion.
So even if you would be married for a week, for example,
yes,
then that's bypasses
it. As long as you, yes. So in the interest of time, I need to leave Stephanie some time here. So I'll be here to answer any additional questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol.